application whitelisting has long been thought of as a good way of enhancing cybersecurity. But certifying and maintaining applications lists proved too labor-intensive and expensive. Now the National Security Agency may have found a more efficient route to application whitelisting. Joining me with more, Eric Chudow, Senior Mitigations Expert for Cybersecurity in NSA's Information Assurance Directorate. Mr. Chudow, good to have you on.
Thank you, Tom.
Tell us what it is you're doing precisely here.
Application whitelisting is a way of preventing malware that we don't even know about from running on our computers. Because it has the whitelist of what's allowed to run, and everything else is blocked by default. And so at NSA, we have a fair amount of guidance that we've worked with DOD and DHS and others to push out across government, especially our national security system, as well as to the rest of the federal government and to critical infrastructure and industry for how they can implement application whitelisting in the best way for their own network. We don't curate the whitelist for other networks. We have a starter policy on our GitHub site that they can use to start, but then we have guidance for how they can keep that whitelist updated and how to automate that process as best they can to make it efficient.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical. Suppose I'm a civilian agency, the Federal Trade Commission, and they do a lot of truth in advertising work. They might visit commercial sites that the average consumer would visit, and those tend to be loaded with third-party ads and all kinds of junk that comes in that could be malicious. So is it possible to whitelist the main site, but block other third parties that feed these sites from coming in?
Yes. So, I mean, with applications in particular, the application that you're running would be allowed to run, but then other components that would be downloaded, other sites that could be accessed that would try to push other programs to the computer would not be on the whitelist and therefore would be blocked.
So these applications could be coming from one of these feeder sites, like an advertising server somewhere that's nefarious.
Correct. One of the keys of application whitelisting is it doesn't really matter how the software, the programs, the files get onto the computer or device, that it cares about identifying those files and programs and saying, you know, is this application allowed? Is this piece of the application allowed? And if so, you know, through digital signatures or other methods to identify it, it will then allow it if it's on the whitelist or otherwise just block it by default.
How do you find out as an organization what you can safely whitelist?
And that's where a lot of the improvement has come in the last number of years. Some of that is by automation in terms of learning, you know, what is my organization normally using, normally accessing that should be allowed, but then also leveraging a number of the vendors that have cloud repositories of information, reputation about what should be allowed on the network, what is known to be pretty good, and then what things maybe they've never seen before that, you know, could likely be malware and that we don't want to allow.
And in general, those that you tend to block, that an organization would tend to block, where are there trends for what types of programs they tend to be, what sort of code they are, or where they might originate?
I'm sure that there are, you know, trends that things are coming from different places, and you can source that and say, all right, these things should not be allowed from any of these types of locations. But a lot of it has to do more with knowing about what we want to run and where those are coming from. You know, say it's, you know, from Microsoft or other vendors that, you know, we trust their code and we want to run on our network, rather than specifically knowing where all the bad stuff is coming from, especially the, you know, malware authors will try to blend in as much as they can with legitimate software that we want to run on our networks. That way we'll potentially be confused and allow that to run as well. So we try to just identify the known good and tie that back to a digital signature or something like that, so we know for sure that it's coming from the right place, and then block everything else, even if it seems to be somewhat similar, because that could be, you know, malware trying to confuse us.
We're speaking with Eric Chudow, Senior Mitigations Expert for Cybersecurity in the NSA's Information Assurance Directorate. And how labor-intensive is this? Because there are, I guess, millions and millions of applications out there. Can you set a profile and then let that do the work for you? Or how does this work operationally?
Exactly. Some places have found it to be very difficult to keep the whitelist updated. And it used to be much more manually intensive, where you could have, you know, several admins working full-time keeping it up to date. But now there are plenty of application whitelisting solutions from different vendors that do a lot to automate that process. So it'll learn automatically what is changing. Sometimes it can go out to the vendor's, you know, knowledge base and say, oh, should this be allowed automatically because the vendor knows that it's pretty good software, and update things automatically, or you know, manually make changes. But usually that's only, you know, every few days or weekly, potentially even monthly, if things aren't changing very often. So the maintenance tail has gone down quite a bit.
And I spoke earlier about websites, but this could also be applications that come in through email attachments too, that can also be white or blacklisted, or whitelisted and the rest filtered out by default.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we've seen certainly over the years within the DoD, many applications coming in by email, or especially, you know, links to applications, you know, from spear phishing email, different pieces of malware that, you know, may look like a video file convinces someone, oh, or here's a what claims to be a document about pay and benefits that, you know, any service member would want to open and run, but unfortunately it's actually malware underneath. And so however it gets onto the computer, the key part of the whitelisting is that if it's not on the whitelist, it'll be blocked. So even if it confuses someone, you know, I would click on some of these emails and these links myself. But whitelisting itself will protect me and the computer and the network from actually running the bad software.
So basically, it sounds like the premise is that whitelisting, if you can find a way to automate it, as you've described, is more efficient than blacklisting.
Not so much that it's more efficient as much as we just don't know all of the malware that's out there today. There is so much malware. Blacklisting, like traditional antivirus, for example, just can't keep updated all the time for every known bad thing. And sometimes there's some malware that is unique, that's targeted to an organization. We in the government and industry have a lot of very sensitive information that attackers may want, and they may customize it for us, in which case the antivirus vendors will have never seen it before. They can't blacklist it. And so whitelisting, though, will block it by default. And especially with ransomware nowadays, we've seen a number of instances of this where, you know, there may be a unique version, and as soon as it starts running, it starts encrypting your data, locking it away from you. And so you really want to prevent it before it gets started.
So what has NSA created? That is to say, you have tools now available across government at GitHub, or what is the product from NSA that we can look at now?
Sure. So we have several guidance papers that we have on our IAD.gov website, as well as several scripts and starter information on our GitHub IAGov site. Especially for DoD, we've been having a significant push to adopt and upgrade to Windows 10. And as part of that, we have a what's called the Secure Host Baseline, which is a hardened version of Windows 10, which comes with a starter application whitelisting policy. You then need to add more applications and refine it a little bit, but it comes kind of out of the box, so to speak, with a whitelisting policy that will block everything else that doesn't come with that hardened baseline. And that is available on our IAGov GitHub site publicly for anyone.
Eric Tudow is Senior Mitigations Expert for Cybersecurity in NSA's Information Assurance Directorate. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.